Hello, everybody. It's nice to see you here. We've got a good list of both attendees, some staff and some faculty there, as well as a couple of helpers behind the scenes here. For those of you who don't realize it, I have signed in as Michael, but this is BL Allison. Want to cover a couple of slides first. It looks like everybody's good on the microphone, so nobody needs to change that right there. Yes, Linda, I see your hand is up. Go ahead.
I thought I was putting it down. I'll put it down.
Okay. And that's a good setup for this particular slide right here. Okay. Because of some real bad interference that we get and some echoing, we're going to keep you all on mute. But you have the capability now. This is the kind of webinar where you have the capability to raise your hand. And it's going to look like this right here. And the arrow showing is going to point in the direction that you're going to want it to go. So if you see a little green arrow with the arrow pointing up inside the hand, that means your hand is down and you have an opportunity if you want to put it up. If you see a red arrow in that little hand and it's pointing down, it means that your hand is up and you have the opportunity, once we've noticed it, to put it down. Okay? So that's the way the hand goes. I hope everybody can find it. Why don't you all just really quickly raise your hand so I know that you can see this on your little dashboard there. I see several of them going up. I see most of them going up. Still a couple that aren't there, but that's okay. You're all getting the picture here. All right, now put your hands down, please. There we go. See how easy that is? And I've got a couple folks here who will help me watch the hands. Sometimes you get involved in the, you know, reading your notes and you don't notice, but I've got people who are going to help me with that. Also, if you're not able to raise your hand or if you're not able to speak, you have the opportunity down here to type a little message. If you don't see this message block, then what you probably do is have a little plus sign where it says chat. And all you have to do is touch that plus sign, and it will expand this particular block and give you the capability to type messages. Again, I have people watching for that too. Okay. Dorothea, do you have a question? Dorothea, I've unmuted you. Did you have a question?
Oh, sorry, couldn't see the little arrow. No, hello, and goodbye.
Okay, that's fine. Bye. Put your hand, there you go. Okay, and the other thing is that I'd like you to keep yourself on self-mute. I'm going to have you muted, but just in case, if we've opened it up and let you ask a question, if you'll also know how to self-mute yourself, that way we can minimize those echoes that we have and the distortion, you know, hearing birds in the background, trains going by, that kind of thing. Here's your microphone. You've got it here on the little panel. And you should also have it here by your name. All you have to do is click either one of those, and it will self-mute you. Okay, so when it comes, when you ask a question and we unmute you, make sure that you're also take yourself off of self-mute before you talk. And then expect a delay after being addressed, because we're all here from all over the world, and so there can be a little delay in the voice getting from one wire to another wire, or whatever the technical term is these days. Okay, and again, if you have a problem with echoes, please mute yourself first to see if that helps the problem. And if not, if you continue to have a problem, if you continue to hear interference, then type a message, please, or raise your hand and alert us. Maybe there's something wrong with my line or something. So, okay, you still got a couple people coming in, but that's fine. Okay, we're almost down to the wire. This is the second to the last one, the sign of Aquarius. And of course, these are based on the Alice Bailey books. She actually did a series of articles on it that was in the Beacon, the little newsletter magazine thing that they had. And that was, those articles were then put together and published. And that's the book, The Labors of Hercules. And I use this slide. I have a couple of other slides that I alternate. Because, you know, the Hercules myth tells us so much. These labors, they're a synthetic picture of a disciple's work from the mental plane and through the emotional plane and then out into that physical plane manifestation. It's work that can be very slow, very arduous. It's carried out under great difficulties, and it's often done in blind ignorance of the forces that are being released, the results that are being achieved. But step by step, each aspirant is led along the path, learning about self-knowledge and development, character. The nature of them is tested and tried until the qualities which characterize the form can be transmuted into those which reveal the soul. Isn't that a wonderful opportunity for us here to learn through the signs by the lessons that Hercules teaches us? And progress isn't just limited to disciples. Yes, Hercules was a disciple, and this was his final time going through the wheel in the proper order. You know, Aries to Taurus to Gemini to Cancer and so on to Pisces, where average man goes through it in the reverse order. We start in Pisces and then go to Aquarius and then go to Capricorn and then go to Sagittarius. So we're hitting all the highlights, all the hard signs, all of the important service and savior signs before we have any of the skills necessary to use them properly. But we all have, in some fashion or another, every single sign in our chart. So we work with all 12 of them to some degree. Some are a little more represented than others in our chart, but we still see all of them. They're all there. They all work together. And Hercules shows us that through these wonderful journeys. As with every single one of his labors, Hercules faces the presiding one. Within the place of peace, let me see what we've got here. Within the place of peace, the great presiding one poured forth the radiance of his exalted thought. The teacher, Hercules' teacher, drew nigh. The single flame must light the other 49. The great presiding one affirmed. So be it, the teacher answered. Having lit his own lamp, Hercules now must bring the light to others. Not long thereafter, the teacher summoned Hercules. 11 times the wheel has turned, and now you stand before another gate. For long you have pursued the light, which flickered uncertainly, then waxed to a steady beacon, and now shines like a blazing sun. Turn now your back upon the brightness. Reverse your steps. Go back to those whom the light is but a transient point, and help them make it grow. Direct your steps to Augeas, whose kingdom must be cleansed of ancient evil. I have spoken. And Hercules went through the 11th gate in search of the king. Okay, the myth. And as we've seen before in some of these other labors, there are different variations on the myth. There are different variations on the orders of the myth. And I think that's interesting. I think it's interesting to see all those various different things. But we're using the ones that DK mentions. We're using the ones that Alice Bailey described from us. So there's going to be a little differences here. When Hercules approached the realm of King Augeas, he found the stables hadn't been cleaned in years, actually in decades. The stench was horrendous, and the pastures were so, as they put it, amply dunged, that no crops could grow. I know of a couple of local colloquialisms that fit right there, and so I'm kind of laughing a little bit here to myself. Knee-deep in the icky stuff. In consequence, a blighting pestilence was sweeping through the land, wreaking havoc with human lives. To the palace, Hercules went, and he sought out the king, who met him with distrust and belief. "You say that you will do this mighty task without reward?" the king declared suspiciously. "I have no faith in those who make such boasts. Some cunning plan you have contrived, O Hercules, to take my throne from me. Of men who seek to serve the world without recompense, I have not heard. At this point, though, I'd welcome any fool who sought to help. But a bargain must be struck, lest I be chided as a foolish king. If you, within a single day, shall do what you have promised, one-tenth of my flock of cattle shall be yours. But if you fail, your life and fortune will be in my hands. Of course, I do not think you can fulfill your boast, but try." And Hercules wandered through this blighted place and saw a cart go by that was piled high with dead, the victims of all this pestilence. He contemplated a while, and he saw two rivers. These Greek names, you know. I'll do my best, sorry. The Alpheus and the Peneus flowing nearby, and an idea flashed in his mind. By great exertion, he succeeded in diverting both of these streams so that they poured their waters through the dung-filled stables of the king Augeas. The rushing torrents swept away the long accumulated filth, purging that fetid muck. Within a single day, the task that was declared impossible had been performed. When Hercules, quite satisfied with this result, returned to Augeas, the king scowled. "You have succeeded by a trick," the king cried out in rage. "The rivers did the work, not you. It was a ruse to take my cattle from me, a plot against my throne. Rewards you shall not have. Get out of here before I cut you down." The angry king thus banished Hercules and bade him nevermore set foot within his realm on penalty of sudden death. Nice king, huh? Having performed the task, the son of man, who was also the son of God, went back to his teacher. "A server of the world you have become," the teacher said when Hercules drew nigh. "You have gone on by going back. You have come to the house of light by yet another path. You have spent your light that the light of others might shine. The jewel in that 11th labor is yours forevermore." Okay, let me stop here and see if anybody has any questions. We've finished the myth part before we go on to the meaning of the myth. Any questions? Comments? I don't see any hands. Okay, let me move on. Having common sense, which real initiates always have, Hercules contemplated the problem before he took action. The filth represents the accumulated dross that man has created on his mental, emotional, and physical levels, and which creates separativeness. The two rivers, the water of life and the river of love, must be released so that the conditions in which people live are improved. But there is no appreciation for the advanced worker. People fear what they do not understand. And like the king, they're suspicious of somebody who comes in and says, hey, let me help you, and you don't need to pay me. So what did he do? He broke down the wall surrounding the stables to divert the two rivers through them. He did not try to sweep and clean it as others had, but he broke down the barriers by using the two rivers. Without effort on his part, the stables were cleaned. Although I would say breaking down the barriers was effort on his part, but that's what we're told. Now, in our present time, for the first time, humanity is a coordinated, complete unit with the mind, emotional nature, and physical body functioning as one. And that is symbolic of the stables that have not been cleaned in years. We've got the components there, but we still have all that dross. So he broke down the barriers. That's the first thing that has to happen in the Aquarian age. How can you have brotherhood if you don't have, if you've got barriers there blocking it? We're just now beginning to see it. We're beginning to think in broader terms and not to be as exclusive as we used to be. I, me, my group. Emerging in the world now are groups of men and women everywhere who are wrestling with themselves in order to be inclusive in their thought. Because in the Aquarian age, nations as we know them now will have to go. Nations fighting for themselves and for what they want, nation against nation, the cultivation of patriotism cultivates hatred. We see that every day, don't we? We have to teach people that they are human beings with certain responsibilities, and the breaking down of barriers on a large scale has to be brought about by public opinion, and this is of slow growth and largely emotional, and that's one of the problems. In the Aquarian age, especially in the second decanate, when Mercury, the messenger from the soul to the brain via the mind, is ruling, we will have public opinion that is molded by thought and not by emotion, and we shall have the world full of thinkers. Keep that in mind. Aquarian age in the second decanate, which is degrees 10 through 19 of Aquarius, Mercury the messenger will be the ruler. I'm going to talk about more about decanates a little bit later on. We are now only emotional, watery, fluidic creatures that are as yet unilluminated. We're struggling with separativeness, which is part of the outgoing Piscean energy of the sixth ray. We are not yet able to be world conscious, to be in rapport with every phase of human thought, but we shall be someday. That's part of the new Aquarian energy. Cultivating the Aquarian spirit of leaving people free with a capacity to trust. We need to cut out distrust of all kind and believe in them, and they won't let you down. You can draw out the best in them by believing in them. And if you don't believe in them, then blame yourself when they don't perform and not them. If a person mistrusts you, it is because you are not clear. Self-reference is always necessary for the Aquarian, but not that self-consciousness that we find now. When we have broken down the barriers of separativeness, then we let in the two rivers, the water of life and the river of love. it's interesting to try and express yourself what you understand by these two rivers. What is the river of life and the river of love? And I'm not going to attempt to answer that for you, and neither did Alice Bailey in her articles. That's something that we have to look inside to try and figure out. But she asks us if we appreciate that a great hole was made in the walls during the war. She, of course, is talking about the First and Second World Wars here. Actually, I think these articles were written in 37, so it would have been the First World War. And since those holes made during that war, life and energy have come to mean something more than they ever did before. And this continues to be true to this day, because there is so much outcry because of all the warring factions and deplorable conditions around the globe, and all the well-meaning people who just are standing up saying, I'm not taking this anymore, and trying to do something about it. So she goes on to tell us, when you have done all you can to break down the walls and to express life and love, aided by your own soul, whose nature is love wisdom, do not look for recognition, because you're not going to get it. That's what Hercules found. The hard task of the pioneer in any field of thought, of any person who is endeavoring to express new ideals, is always non-recognition, and sometimes worse. You won't be praised, you won't be pitied, and you will have a difficult time. But remember, if you are hewing the path so that in the future, hatred and separation may actually die out. Okay, before I go on to the energies of Aquarius, are there any questions on this particular part of it? I don't see any hands. I hope I'm not missing. Ah, there we go. Go ahead, Walter.
Yes, I was wondering if there were any connections between Hercules and the Christ, because the description of the accumulated dross on emotional and other levels sounds somewhat similar to the work of Jesus the Christ and what he did.
Well, it does, and you know, they're both considered to be sons of sun gods, I guess is what I'm trying to say. But I don't actually have an answer for you. Does anybody else have a comment on Walter's question? There's similarities in both because they both forged the way for us. They both showed us what they're doing and how we can do the same thing. And they both represent this service aspect that is so important in a disciple. No, I don't see anybody else attempting to answer it. Here's Dorothea. Go ahead, you have a comment or a question?
Yes, I was thinking about that question and also the word trust that was in this particular section. And thinking of Jesus and thinking of the Christ, and then going down to us, the lower, you know, very much lower correspondence. And surely it would be, as you see a person, so shall they appear to you. And that would have a vibratory implications, I would think. And the Christ consciousness within Jesus probably operated on that same principle on a much higher level. It would be the resonance or vibratory level.
I agree. That's a very good point, because that's actually what we're all trying to accomplish, is that Christ consciousness that Christ did and showed us how to do, and Hercules is now showing us how to do. And yeah, that's exactly what it's saying in here, and that is what Christ himself showed us, the love for all people and the trust in all people and the knowing that there was good in them. that could be brought out. And that was the point that Alice Bailey made in that particular article. Very good point. Thank you for bringing that.
Okay. Excuse me, BL. Risa has a comment in the question box.
Okay. Can you read it, please?
Sure. The pestilence in the kingdom is like our world today, the darkness in the world created by the forces of materialism, the conditions of humanity in crisis.
Thank you, Risa. That's exactly right. We created this, and not just us individually, us as humanity as a whole. And so we all have to deal with it. It has to be brought forward. It has to be dealt with. It has to be cleansed.
Malia just put in a comment, too, that I'll read. She says, as we bring in more light to our vehicles, we can see our own dung more clearly.
Good point. And, you know, that's part of it, shining light on it, seeing it so that we can then deal with it. But you have to see it first. You have to know it's there. Okay. Is that all the questions and comments? I'll go on with the information that Alice Bailey gives us concerning the energies of Aquarius. She talks about how it was thought that the sheep, this was religiously speaking, that the sheep went to heaven and the goats went to the other place, right? But Alice Bailey actually tells us she thought it was is actually the other way around. The goat in Capricorn is the initiate, and from a certain esoteric angle, the goats do go to heaven because they function in the spiritual kingdom, which is heaven, and the sheep remain on earth, which, after all, is technically hell, right? Until they are no longer sheep, until they learn to have individual thought, become goats, climb the mountain, and cease to be just followers. She tells us that entrance into heaven is entrance into the Aquarian Age. That during the last 200 years or so, the transition into the Aquarian Age began in conjunction with each other, and she gives us a little astronomy about that, that at about the year 2000, our pole star and another star, Vega, will be in conjunction with each other, and that the Aquarian Age will be fully functioning with us then, but only fully with us in the sense that we shall be entering it, and Piscean forces will still be receding. You know, there's always that overlap, several hundred years, where the new energy is coming in and the old energy is going out. For those astrologers of you with us here, it's similar to planets on the cusp of a house. You know, a lot of people will just move them into the next house because the energy is right there, and sooner or later it's going to progress into it sooner more so than others. So you have to look at the fact that it's not one clear line of demarcation. So we've got the outgoing Piscean and the incoming Aquarian overlapping, and that's one of the reasons that we have a lot of the turmoil going on right now. All that transpires, she tells us, in the physical plane expression is due to the subjective or the inner forces. DK tells us that all the time. We always have to look at that inner reason that manifests itself in whatever's happening in the outer world. It's one thing, she tells us, to be subjected to blind force. It's another to have an intelligent outlook upon what is happening and to understand and look for certain occurrences like we see by studying the previous astrological ages. Then she gives us some great information about a couple of the previous astrological ages. You know, we're moving through them backward. It's based on the precession of the equinoxes. And she tells us that what caused the worship of the bull in, or she asks us a question, what caused the worship of the bull in Taurus. You know, people at the time, they thought it was the bestial nature of humanity, and they took the bull as a symbol of the animal nature and then deified it. And that's given to us in some ancient, some interpretations of the ancient mysteries. Is it because there were subjective forces playing upon our planet as the sun passed through the sign Taurus? Probably. That was more than likely the subjective reason. It was the age of Taurus then, when all of that was happening. The lesson for man was that under the symbol of the bull, he had to wrestle with the animal in himself. Then our sun passed into Aries, the age of Aries and the ram, and we have the sacrificial lamb, showing that the sacrifice of the animal nature was beginning to succeed the concept of wrestling with the animal nature. Then the sun passed into Pisces. The forces that played upon our planet at that time brought into the consciousness of man his essential duality and the link between the two parts of himself, the two fishes that are linked by the band in Pisces. This consciousness on a large scale began to make its impact upon the human being, that he is the soul and body. Christ came in Pisces to demonstrate to us perfectly what would be our ultimate achievement when we linked these two together, the fish, the symbol of the second person, and the avatar, the fish swimming in matter. Having traced that wonderful, idealistic, evolutionary teaching down the last 5 to 6,000 years as a result of the subjective forces playing upon humanity through these ages, we are now passing into the sign of Aquarius, where through the symbolism of water and purification, we shall learn how to be the soul, not the human being. And of course, the Christ will be with us again, the Lord Maitreya. He was with us for the Piscean Age, and he's going to be with us again for the Aquarian Age. He epitomized both for us. At the end of the Aquarian Age, approximately 2,200 years ahead to 2,500 years ahead, somewhere in that neighborhood, do you have any idea what humanity is going to be like then? Isn't that something inspiring to contemplate? Is that more Piscean? Is my Pisces coming out more so than my Aquarian? The animal nature, the emotional nature, and the mentality will be secondary. And the soul, the consciousness aspect, the universal urge will have surged to the forefront. I like that forecast. Putting it in another way, she tells us, we shall have left behind the human kingdom. And though we may still be inhabiting bodies, our consciousness will be focused in the fifth kingdom of nature, the spiritual kingdom. The opposite sign to Aquarius is Leo, which is the sign of the individual, the man who has found himself as a human being. He stood upon his own feet, was the center of his little universe, and the stars revolved around him. Everything happened in himself. By that, he learned great lessons. It was just possible he was not as important as he thought. He was tested to see how much persistence he had. The outstanding characteristic of the aspirant is endurance, and the sign that calls for the utmost endurance is Scorpio. The disciple triumphs in Scorpio. And then in Sagittarius, he becomes the one-pointed disciple who cannot turn back. He goes on, and because he does, he climbs to the top of the mountain in Capricorn and undergoes transfiguration. In Aquarius, the disciple becomes the serving master. He can be a master because he has learned to serve, and he can serve because he is a master. These two things go together. Okay, before I move on to the next slide, the journey, Does anybody have any questions about what we've talked about so far?
Tiffany asks you, what will initiates of today suffer struggles such as Hercules?
Yes, we all do. It's something that every disciple has to go through, and as aspirants, we go through it on smaller scales than what Hercules is doing for us. It's part of our growth. It's part of our evolution. It's how we learn the lessons of the signs, how we pull ourselves up from the bootstraps. Any other questions?
Tiffany had a follow-up question. She says, Hercules is often looked at as a mythical character, yet as a human, he had to take life. In our teachings on harmlessness, how do we deal with this possible dichotomy?
Well, that's a good question, but, you know, DK tells us in several spots, we have to fight for good. We have to fight for right. And that's what Hercules is doing when he takes a life. He's not doing it for self-gain. He's doing it as a service, and he's doing it for something that is evil, something that is oppressing other people. Does that make sense? You know, if you read the disciple books, DK talks to several of them in there, and he's rather strict with them. And in a couple of the other books, I forget which ones right off the top of my head, he talks about that. He talks about we can't just be the sheep. We can't, as Alice Bailey puts it in here, we have to stand up. We have to fight. And they, the hierarchy, actually threw their forces to the side of the Allies during World War II because they felt that that side was the more right at the time. Okay, any more questions or any comments? All right, I'm going to move on to the next slide. Let's look at it again from as the journey. As always, what we find with the labors of Hercules is the hallmark of the disciple. And in this particular case, we're now to the signs where it's the hallmarks of the initiate. Hercules is an initiate now. He passed through Capricorn. And so he's pledged to do three things, which can be summed up as the outstanding characteristics of all true initiates. If they are not present in some measure, the man is not an initiate. First one is unselfish service. We are no longer interested in ourself, but our consciousness being universal and us recognizing that. There is nothing for us to do but assimilate the troubles of our fellow men and help them out. Group work. The soul is a group. It's the one oversoul. So anything that is soul work is going to be group work. This is something that we actually know very little about. The world is full of organizations and societies, people training on how to be to work in teams and stuff, but a lot of it is based on ambitious people. The average group is a hotbed of jealousies, people trying to impress the others with the amount of their knowledge and their self-sacrifice, but this isn't true group work. Group work is standing alone spiritually in the handling of your affairs with complete forgetting of one's own self and the affairs and the welfare of a particular section of humanity that we might be associated. It negates ambition. It negates the progress upward in any lodge, organization, and it negates all assuming of official prerogatives. Alice Bailey suggests that the new groups will not have officials, but will work automatically because of the intuitional spirit, spiritual interplay between the minds of the units in the group. They'll be so telepathically in rapport that they'll know what they need to do and when they need to do it for the group good. This is something that most of us don't understand yet. And then the third thing is self-sacrifice. The meaning of self-sacrifice is actually making the self holy. You know, we tend to think of it as, oh, I have to give up something. That's not what it originally was intended. It's making the self holy. That holy as in spiritual. That deals with the self of the group and the self of the individual. That is the work of the initiate. Everything we do is soul-based, spiritual-based. From the top of the mountain in Capricorn, Hercules has to come down, literally, in this particular labor, into the material filth and clean the Augean stables. The object of the test can be summed up in this way. Hercules had to aid in the cleansing of the world by the right direction of the force of life through it. And Tiffany, that sentence is a good answer to the question that you asked. He had to aid in the cleansing of the world by the right direction of the forces of life through it. You appreciate that we are entering the Aquarian age where materialism, as we know it, will have completely died out at the close, the end of the Aquarian age, and when the whole life will be interpreted in terms of energies. We are dealing entirely with forces. We shall probably have a new language, symbolic language of energy itself. We shall all be practical occultists. That's an occultist who lives and works in the world of forces and who begins with the forces within himself. And then he directs those forces for world good. You will get a little understanding of what is meant by wielding the forces if you watch your speech, Alice Bailey tells us. Why do you raise your voice when you're emoting? Because the energy sweeping through you has an effect upon your vocal apparatus. You are dealing with and misusing energies. So watch yourself. Just watch your speech. Begin to work in the world of forces within yourself. Aquarius is actually depicted as the man holding an inverted vase. The man inverts the vase, and out of it come two streams of water, the river of life and the river of love that we've been talking about. Those two words, life and love, are the two words that embody the technique of the Aquarian age. Not form, not mind, but life and love. Two words we use constantly, but which we don't actually understand the concepts behind them, not fully anyway. Okay, any questions on this before I move on to the next slide? She talks about it, but I'm gonna deviate a little bit here because I want to go into what some other books tell us about service. I don't see any questions or hands. Doesn't mean I'm not missing any. Okay, let me move on then to what is service. Hold on a second. Darn crazy weather, even here in Florida, is driving my allergies crazy. Okay, Aquarius is all about service. If you look in the Master Index to the Alice Bailey books, there's 5 full pages on what service is. It's a very important thing. And if you don't read every single one of those references, I mean, it would take take you a long time to do that. At least read a couple of them. This particular slide, I've pointed out a couple of them here in the bullets that I'm going to talk a little bit about, and then I've also provided you with a couple of other references that are a little bit longer, but well worth looking at. The best sources of it, I think, are the ones in esoteric psychology, and let's look at the definition here from White Magic, page 204. It tells us that right motive leads to right service. This is an expression of love to the family, to our master's group, and to nature. It's we expand out. It starts with the family group, and then that group gets larger and larger as we expand it out. Let me see. It often parallels in its objective form the motivating consciousness. This is, again, the subjective inner reality then motivates the outward objective consciousness that we see. From service to an individual is an expression of love to the family, to the nation. I have nature, and I think it should be nation on that slide. There grows service to a member of the hierarchy, to the group, and eventually service to humanity. Eventually, there is developed a consciousness of and service of the divine plan, and a consecration to the underlying purpose of the great existence who brought all into being in the fulfillment of that specific objective. A paragraph in Dinah 2, page 24, DK tells us, service, I would remind you, is a scientific process calling forth all the soul powers into full expression on the physical plane. It is a service which causes a divine manifestation, or what you call a divine incarnation. If a man is truly serving, he will draw upon all the resources of spiritual strength and light, and all the wisdom and servers, and all direction of his soul, because the task to be done is always too big for the personality. Got to be the soul. Some of the world's greatest servers are men and women. This is a fascinating concept. Some of the world's greatest servers are men and women who are very close to the spiritual hierarchy and working under its direction, inspiration, and consciousness. But they know nothing of esotericism. They don't actually recognize the hierarchy in their brain consciousness, and they remain unaware of the personnel and the masters of the wisdom. They're under their influence. They're to a stage in their evolved life where they can make things happen, and they do this instinctively, but they're not actually aware of esotericism, of the hierarchy. They do things because innately they think it's right. They know it's right. Isn't that amazing? One of the tragedies today of the esoteric world is the vast amount of facts in the possession of esoteric students and the piling up of knowledge about the hierarchy and its personnel in the minds of disciple. This knowledge and the aspiration obliterates their need for their fellow man. In other words, they've got all this knowledge, but they're not using it. Whereas the other people, they're not bogged down with that knowledge. They're actually practicing. And this constitutes one of the problems which the hierarchy has faced, the problem of the balance of dual orientation, the problem of the unawakened aspirant, the problem of the learned disciple, and the ignorance and knowledge that both must give place to understanding and wisdom. Eventually, both things have to happen. You need to be working with full consciousness of your own evolution and how the part that you are playing in humanity. And you have to have that study and that knowledge, but you have to use it for the benefit of humanity. And that's what we learn in this great sign of Aquarius. Okay, 9 of 2, page 514. DK says, I would suggest the following experiment in subjective attitudes that in the last analysis is a definition of meditation. The end of all meditation is concerned with the attitude of the personality to the soul, which is self-control, the attitude of the integrated man to humanity, which is service, and the attitude of the disciple to the hierarchy, which is intuitional sensitivity. And I'm not going to talk specifically about them, but they're at the bottom of the slides, right down here. You can see some other really good references. And of course, when you get the link to this particular recording, which is going to be a little bit late because Brett does his sound magic stuff to it before he posts it, and he's off right now, so it's going to be a little delay getting this posted, but you'll also get a copy of the slides with it, so this isn't something you have to be madly writing down. I'd like to also tell you, and that's part of what you're going to see right here in TCF and what you're going to read when you get into esoteric psychology too, here. There are actually 7 laws of the soul, and each one has a predominant ray energy. There's the law of sacrifice with ray 4 outpouring energy and the at oneing factor. There's the law of magnetic impulse, ray 2 radiatory energy, manifesting factor. There's the law of service, which is what we're talking about here, ray 6 outgoing energy and the vivifying factor. The law of repulse, ray 1 rejecting energy, dispersing factor. A higher iteration of the law of sacrifice that works through this lower law. The law of group progress, ray 7, progressive energy, evolving factor, a higher reiteration of the law of magnetic impulse that works through this lower law. The law of expansive response, ray 3, expansive energy, adaptive factor, a higher iteration of the law of service that works through the lower law, and the law of the lower 4, ray 5 energy, fiery energy, and a vitalizing factor. So that's just a brief taste of what those are. If you look at the table, TCF page 1220, it gives you the names of them and the symbols for them. It's a you know, just a little half-page table. Whereas the stuff in Esoteric Psychology, Volume 2, both pages, it goes into specifics, a couple of pages on each one of these laws. And then there's a couple of pages on the methods of ray service. So whatever your soul ray is, you know, it'll tell you specifically what those methods are for that particular ray. And one last thing on service before I move on to some of the other slides. Unselfish service is not the service that we render because we are told that service is the way to liberation. It's service that is rendered because our consciousness is no longer self-centered. We don't care what the outcome is. We're not proud that we did it. We're not doing it for show. We're doing it because our consciousness says this is something that we need to do, and we need to do it to help other people. Okay, any questions before we move on to Aquarius, to the various different parts of... Let me show you what I mean. the elements' qualities. Any questions before we talk about this? I don't see any. I don't see any hands. Okay. Aquarius, the sign is the water carrier. It is an air sign, as are Gemini and Libra. Qualities of it, the will to serve. First the lower self and then the higher self. World service, as I've been talking about. Individual consciousness that's transmuted into group consciousness. The polar opposite, as we talked about, is Leo, which is a fire sign, which is individual awareness, the urge towards self-knowledge, self-mastery, that prepares for the selfless service of Aquarius. They're not opposites. They're part of the same axis. They have to learn to work together. Rulers of Aquarius, exoteric are Uranus, esoteric Jupiter. Key words from the angle of the form: let desire inform, be the rule. And from the soul angle, water of life am I, poured forth for thirsty men. As I mentioned, it's an air sign. They're usually intellectual, good communicators, but they can have a problem with being detached. Esoterically, the keys are the mind and duality. In Gemini, the mind causes duality to be sensed. In Libra, the supermind, duality is overcome by equilibrium. Both are balanced out. In Aquarius, the universal mind, duality is resolved by synthesis. They are masculine, just as the fire signs are. So yang energy, outgoing, expressive, and giving. They represent the day, and they're related to the 1, 3, 5, 7 ray lines. They are compatible with the fire signs. Air and fire signs work out their issues via the relationship axis and through trines and sextiles, which are considered to be favorable aspects. They're also the aspects we take for granted. So, okay. Now, it was mentioned earlier, it was mentioned in this particular labor, and I just lightly touched on it, about the decanence. I don't know how many of you are familiar with decanence, but let me get into it a little bit for you. Okay, here's a little table for you. The decanate, well, it's from the Greek word deca, which means 10. So it's 10 degrees. You know, a sign is 30 degrees, so there's 3 decanates in each one, as you can see from the slide here how they're split up. 0 to 9 is the first decanate. They're also called decans. The second is 10 degrees to 19 degrees, and the third is 20 to 29 degrees. Now, they're not actually going to change the fact that a planet is in a specific sign, but what they're going to do is enhance and refine the energy of that sign based on the relationship of the decanate signs and the rulers involved. Okay? The relationship is based on the shared element. So Aquarius is an air sign, as are Gemini and Libra. So let's start with Gemini. Okay, the first decanate is always of the sign. So it's a double dose of Gemini, and the ruler is Mercury. The second decanate is going to be the next air sign coming up. In this particular case, Libra is the next one. So Libra is the second decanate of Gemini, and Aquarius is the third decanate of Gemini. If we go down to Libra, Libra is first. Then Aquarius, because that's the next air sign after Libra, And the third decanate is Gemini. And now when we're talking about Aquarius, Aquarius is the first decanate, Gemini is the second, and Libra is the third. And what we're specifically interested in is the rulers. Okay? So Uranus is the modern ruler of Aquarius, Mercury of Gemini, and Venus of Libra. In this particular table, because most astrologers use it, I have given the modern rulers. DK, when he talks about decanates in esoteric astrology, he will first give the older, more traditional rulers before the outer planets were found and used a lot in astrology. So you'll find that Mars is the old traditional ruler of Scorpio, Saturn was the old traditional ruler of Aquarius, and Jupiter, the old traditional ruler of Pisces. As I told you, it's about relationships, so this brings more energy for you to consider when you're looking at what your sun sign is, or where your moon might be, or what your descendant is, based on the degree. It brings in the exoteric energy of these particular signs involved. It brings in the esoteric meanings and their rays. And you want to look to relationships between the planet in question and the decanate ruler. This will tell you how friendly or adversarial the relationship between them might be. It just gives you more punch when you look at it. Lets you know more about what's going on. Let me let you look at it a little different way. See, this is Aries, and it shows you the rulers. The first decanate is Aries, Mars is the ruler. The second decanate is Leo, Sun is the ruler. And the third decanate is Sagittarius, so Jupiter is the ruler. So that's what this shows you here when you look at it. Some people it's easier to look at tables, other people it's easier to look at the wheel and relate that to your natal chart. From Esoteric Astrology, page 148, I know that Alice Bailey, in her discussion, she talked about the decanates in this particular labor, but I'm going to the source, to Esoteric Astrology. The decanates in Aquarius are governed, according to Alan Leo, this is what DK is telling us, by Saturn, which was, remember, the old traditional ruler. Saturn, Mercury, and Venus. Saturn, Mercury, and Venus. And the effect that they will produce upon human affairs and world conditions is already beginning to appear. Saturn is the planet of discipleship and of opportunity. It is exceedingly active today, presenting to the world disciples those difficult situations and crises which will involve free choice, discriminative pioneering, wise response, and corrective decision, thus bringing about the destruction of that which hinders without the relinquishing of any true values of which humanity may be aware. The individual disciple has been faced with these conditioning and releasing circumstances, and today humanity itself is in the same position. We stand at the gateway of the new world, of the new age, and the new civilizations, ideals, and culture. Saturn, having offered us the opportunity and proffered us a choice to bring about the needed changes and to destroy that which holds back the free expression of the soul, eventually stands aside in order to let his great brother Mercury spread the light of the soul, intuitive and illuminating, upon the situation. To interpret for us, through our own illumined minds, the significance of events, and to relate the old and the new, the past and the future, through the light of the presence. Hence, the subjective usefulness of the present general trend towards meditation processes, which bring about the capacity to be impressed from on high. and to be illumined by the light of the soul. When the task of Saturn and Mercury has been accomplished, then the third decanate, Venus, which is the union of heart and mind, will usher in the long-hoped-for era of love wisdom, of brotherhood, and of expressed brotherly relationships. Opportunity, illumination, and brotherhood, these are the gifts that Shambhala is planning to confer upon mankind during the Aquarian Age, if man will but prepare for them, accept them, and use them. Only the future will make clear man's reaction. DK goes on to tell us that other astrologers use different decanates, and they say it's Venus, Mercury, and the Moon. Well, remember, most people are going backwards through, so that would be Venus, Mercury, and the Moon veiling Uranus. So it's not that far off, you know, if you consider you're on the reversed wheel and you're still reversing backwards through everything. The Moon, which here takes the place of Saturn, hides the planet Uranus. Okay, in this case, Uranus, the occult planet, stands for exoteric science, which penetrates into the hidden side of form life, and thus we have the period wherein man is not alert enough or conscious enough to seize upon the opportunity and turn it to exoteric or soul ends, but can identify himself with the more advanced aspects of the form. In other words, the science of it, but not necessarily the spiritualism of it. The energy which produces opportunity, illumination, and brotherly love as expressed and attained upon the fixed cross, the cross of the disciples, demonstrates upon the mutable cross or the common cross as difficulty, the versatile and volatile mind, unstable and dark, and as sex. This appears clearly in the words spoken to man upon the mutable cross as he passes through an Aquarian cycle. The word said, let desire in form be the ruler. Remember, that was from the angle of form. For desire becomes gained knowledge, and the knowledge of that which is hidden at any stage upon the path of evolution relates the individual to Uranus. When the man is upon the fixed cross, the word come forth, water of life am I poured forth for thirsty men. The implications are so clear that there's no need for me to be explicit or to elaborate on the theme. That was in the Aquarius part of esoteric astrology, but there was also another little bit in the Virgo part of esoteric astrology. This is one of the things I had to do when I was first reading esoteric astrology. I did it electronically, dumped it all into Word, and then started cutting and pasting all the cute little things that were said in one part of the book that belonged to another sign. He says, in connection with the decanates, I would point out that I am constantly emphasizing the astrologer needs to study the horoscope of an individual from the angle of his place upon the wheel of the zodiac and to consider which way he's going, clockwise or counterclockwise, especially with the decanates. Is he progressing around the wheel as a personality, counterclockwise, or is he moving forward as a soul? The conflict to which all disciples are subjected can be traced to the fact that the form life of the disciple is influenced in one way by the wheel, the form is influenced one way, and the consciousness by a different way. These are the wheels turning in upon themselves. The disciple enters the sign under the influence of that decanate, which is for him the first, but which is the third for ordinary man. This is interestingly and practically instanced by the constellation Aquarius. From the angle of the disciple, Saturn, Mercury, and Venus. Saturn, Mercury, and Venus. Saturn, Aquarius. It is in the sequence that they affect him and carry him forward on his desired way, thus giving opportunity through conflict, illumination of the mind, and eventually achievement of brotherly love, which is wisdom. Ordinarily speaking, the mass of men would pass through the sign via Venus, Mercury, and Saturn, or the Moon veiling Vulcan. I'm sorry, veiling Uranus. which can be described as instinctual mind or affection of Venus, brotherly love in the embryo, by the slow unfoldment of the mind through the activity of Mercury, and finally the result of this unfoldment, conflict supervenes, and Saturn offers the opportunity to suffer, and through that suffering, to learn to choose rightly, to analyze correctly, and to decide upon the higher values. So, I hope you guys found that interesting. Before I move on to the closing, couple of little slides that I have here, does anybody have any comments or questions? Because we're just about ready to wrap this up. I'm sorry I went a little bit over. I hope you guys don't mind. I don't see any hands. There we go. Go ahead, Ellen. Helen.
Oh, yes, hello. How do you tell whether which way you are going on the wheel according to your chart?
You can't actually tell according to your chart. You know, what DK was saying is it's important for the astrologer and the individual to determine it, and I think it's a mutual determination where the individual is soul-wise before they can actually make that determination.
Okay.
Yeah, and, you know, for most of us, we're still going through it the wrong way. So we're entering, you know, through the last degrees, and we're working our way to the beginning degrees of the sign. But as he said, for disciples, for those individuals who are to that point, they're actually doing it both ways. Outwardly, they're reversing through it like average man does, but inwardly, they're going the other way, and that's what causes all of the conflict.
Oh, well, thank you very much. I didn't know the last sentence. I didn't know what you meant by the last sentence.
Ah,
so
okay.
Now I do. Thank you.
Oh, great, great. Okay. Any other questions or anything before I move on? I'm going to put your hand down. Oh, you got it. Okay. Okay, we talked about Aquarius being an air sign. It's also a fixed sign. Exoterically, they're steadfast, stubborn, determined, but that means inflexible. They work out their issues. This is a cross. They work out their issues via oppositions and squares, which are considered the hard aspects, or as I like to think of them, as that swift kick in the behind that motivates us to make the necessary changes. Esoterically, the fixed signs are all about soul development and control. Taurus is developing the soul light, Leo developing self-mastery, Scorpio resolving conflict and duality, and overcoming desire and illusion. That's a huge one. Those are the major tests there in Scorpio. And then Aquarius is developing group awareness and world service. You're the initiate at the time you make it to Aquarius. The synthesized axes eventually works out the Taurus-Scorpio axes once we're to the point where we can actually synthesize it and we're not doing Taurus or Scorpio as opposing, but as, you know, that one line, that one axis. It's using the wisdom of the light of the soul to overcome the desire through right thought and right action. The Leo-Aquarius synthesized axis, self-mastery that leads to group awareness, and selfless world service. Selfish world service doesn't do anybody any good, does it? Okay, so this is what we've looked at so far. This is where we've come, folks. Progress through the signs. There were the four preparatory signs, Aries, Taurus, Gemini, and Cancer. Then there were the physical plane struggle, Leo, Virgo, Libra, and Scorpio. And finally, we're to the four signs of achievement, Sagittarius, Capricorn, and Aquarius, becoming the world server in Aquarius. We only have one left, the World Savior in Pisces. For those of you who haven't seen them all, they are available for you to download. For those who have seen them all, we highly recommend that you go back and revisit them. I go back every year. I go through each labor because I always learn so much more each time. I don't know if it's I blanked it out the first time I went through it, or I just need to learn it in smaller doses. But I always learn every year as I go through each sign, a different one. Now, we've got a real short period between the next one. The next labor of Hercules is going to be the 1st of March. That's only 2 weeks away. And if any of you have any questions or have any feedback that you'd like, there's my email address right there. I welcome any and all emails from you. So, before I close this out, I'm going to give you all one last opportunity. Would anybody like to make any comment, ask a question? No? Okay, then I'm going to do something. I'm going to unmute everybody and let everybody say goodbye to everybody before we close everything out, okay? Thank you all for sticking with us for a little over an hour, and I hope it was helpful to all of you. So let me see if I can unmute everybody or if I have to do it one at a time.
Aloha from Jenny.
This is the site.
Well, thank you so much.
And she enjoyed it all. Learned a lot.
Very, very good.
Thank you, DL.
Thank you, DL.
You're welcome, everybody, and nice to see you all here.
Thank you.
Bye, everyone. Thank you.
Bye, everyone. Thanks, Walter.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you.